folks, this is Pastor Mike Hoggard coming to you from our top secret broadcasting and research facility here with another Watchman video broadcast. A few months ago, we were dealing with, we had done, 27, 28 episodes of a series on the fourth kingdom. We kind of transferred that over to Ephesians 6, where it talks about we wrestle not with flesh and blood, but with principalities and powers. And we were sort of dealing with the idea, the issue of powers, evil influences, or the power that devils have over this world. And one of the video topics that we discussed was a video called The Power of the Flame. In that Power of the Flame, we looked at a concept that is in, it's in the New Age movement. It is in Jewish mysticism called the Kabbalah. You see it in movies. Bruce Almighty was about this particular concept. And what I'm talking about is what they call the divine spark. The idea is that every human being in the world has had this little spark of the God in them, divinity. You got a little God inside of you that's just a little spark. And one of these days, with the right rituals or the right this or the right that, then that spark, all the sparks from all over the world are going to go off all at once, and there's going to be this time of flame, a flame of divinity. And I want you to think about that as we look at what we're going to look at today. We're still dealing with the singularity. We're dealing with the ideas and the concepts of that. And there is something that I found in the research, putting it together in the last few weeks. You're going to understand and realize that this Bible does, in fact, have the answers to everything that is going on in this world right now. First place we're going to look, Revelation 13. This is what I think is bringing everything about. The idea of we have a beast in Revelation 13 and we have a false prophet. Let's look at what the Bible says. Revelation 13:13. Think about that. Go read Genesis 13:13. You'll find out that it's about Sodom, and ask yourself, how did Sodom turn out? Revelation 13:13, and he doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Think about that, and Sodom. Revelation 13:15, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. So two ideas that we have been looking at, we're going to look at it further, is one, he brings fire down from heaven. Remember, think of the divine spark that they say is in everybody. What it actually is, it's a little piece of the Antichrist. Paul called it in Romans 7, no good thing that dwelleth in his flesh. So we're going to look at that divine spark. Think of technology, robots who are transformed. You get where I'm going? Hang on a second. We're going to look at this fire, this spark of divinity, and the fact that mankind is building an image of something that at some point is going to be a God. It's going to have life in itself. It's going to be self-aware. It is artificial intelligence. It is going to have the ability to speak on its own. This is where we've been studying. We've been kind of looking at this artificial intelligence idea for a while, and the idea that computers will be gods. We're kind of in the phase where we're going to transfer this idea where the artificial intelligence systems become man's God, but then there is going to be the merger of man and this God. So let's kind of look at it with that in mind. I blew it a while ago. I mentioned the AllSpark. The Transformers movies. Transformers actually goes back to the 80s. There was a series of cartoons, and I don't think they got nearly as esoteric in their teachings and their doctrine as they have been with the movies. Now, I've not seen all of the movies. I've seen one of them all the way through. Number one, for me, they're too long. Number two, the camera shots there. You have 5-second camera shots and the camera is moving constantly. It's just kind of hard for me to watch that. But there are some basic principles now in this whole Transformers ethos. And if you don't know what that is, basically, a race of giants who are robots, who are electronic devices, comes down and finds sanctuary on the earth. The gods descend down and they take over the planet and so on. I'm probably getting all this wrong. But anyway, they have the ability. They are in disguise. That was the original concept of the cartoon. Here's this car going around and all of a sudden flips and turns into this robot. Okay. This giant 18-wheel, semi-tractor trailer truck going down the highway and all of a sudden and it turns into this big giant robot. Okay. Anyway, there is a whole, they have developed this whole, mythology about these Transformers. These Transformers, they themselves have a god. The god's name is Primus. Primus means primary or the one, the singular. He is the god of the Transformers. I don't know the whole story, but something happened with Primus. And there are fragments of Primus that exist in all of the Transformers. Does it sound familiar so far? Every transforming robot has the little piece of Primus inside them. That is their soul. That is their heart. That's who they belong to and so on. Same idea, same concept. Then we're introduced to this thing that, I don't know, everybody's fighting over. It's called the AllSpark. I remember a friend of mine, friend of our ministry, asked me several years ago, when the first Transformer movie, you think that AllSpark, you think that's like the divine spark? Absolutely. I absolutely do. So the AllSpark is this magic cube. Think about it. A cube has Manly Hall, Fat Albert Pike and others talk about the symbolism of the cube. Symbolism of the cube is that it has six sides. It's the number six. And when you unfold the cube, it turns into a cross. Okay? Think about it. Anyway, so here we have the AllSpark. It is what gives life to all the Transformers. It has the power to make anything that's electric or an electrically powered device, it has the power to turn that into a living creature, a living transformer. This AllSpark, think about it, has the ability to give a lifeless electronic device life. That's what it does. Okay? So if you have a toaster, the toaster only does one thing. It toasts bread. That's what it does. And yet, if it's touched by the AllSpark, the toaster not only can toast bread now, but it can beat you at Monopoly. That's the idea. So this AllSpark has the ability to take something that's lifeless, an electronic device that has no life. It doesn't have any personality, doesn't have any sentience, has no conscience, it doesn't have any self-awareness, can't talk. Now the AllSpark comes in contact with it, now it gives life. So think about giving life to the image of the beast and causing it to be able to speak. That's what the AllSpark has the ability to do. The shape of the AllSpark, again, it's a cube. I remembered this. Those who practice Jewish Kabbalah. Kabbalah is, I keep explaining this, but Kabbalah is not the religion of the Old Testament. Has nothing to do with it. Oh, they used Old Testament terms like Moses and the law and Abraham and all of these things. But the Kabbalah itself is mystic witchcraft that the Jews inherited from the Babylonians, the Sumerians, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites. Everybody that God told Israel, don't learn the religion, they learned their religion, and they adapted their religion into the terminology of what we are supposed to, what they are supposed to see in the Old Testament. They have Jehovah, whom they call Yahweh, and supposedly Shekinah. Remember her? She's the consort of God. And when Yahweh and Shekinah join together, then a full flame of divinity comes out. The glory of God comes out. You see that? You understand the concepts here? Because several times in the Old Testament, God said that Israel quit following after God and went following after Baal and Ashtaroth. Guess who that is? That is the Yahweh and Shekinah that the Jews say that they, you know, have as their reference right now. That's what's in the Sephiroth, the Tree of Life. Baal and Ashtaroth coming together, flames coming out, and a spark of divinity turning someone into Godhead. Look at this Jewish Kabbalah practitioner. We call him the Hasidic Jews. He is wearing the all spark as a mark on his forehead. That's what he's doing. Now, this is loosely based upon the book of Deuteronomy, where God was talking about his word. He said, God, you shall bind them as a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And here's what I think. I think the real word of God, which is the saving grace of God, it's his word, it's our shield, it's our faith, it's our salvation, it's what protects us from everything. I think as long as those are present as frontlets between our eyes and a sign upon our hand, that is a testimony of God's grace and God's word dwelling in our life. Flip it around. Now you have the all spark, the divine spark, the lost word of Freemasonry that Dan Brown wrote about in The Lost Symbol. It's the anti-Bible, the anti-word, the anti-Christ, marking people on their right hand or on their forehead. And what you see this man wear, that's not a sign of the mark of God. It's a sign of the mark of the beast, the cube, the all. See, the Kabbalahs. Here's this book, Living in Divine Space, Kabbalah and Meditation. And you see the picture of a cube there. The Kabbalists are the ones who believe. In fact, they're the ones who really came up with this divine spark thing. They had this idea of the original Adam, which was not the Adam of the book of Genesis, was an entity referred to as Adam Kadmon. He was God's mediator between God and this temporal world that we live in. And the Adam Kadmon, think about this, thinking about physics and the Big Bang, Adam Kadmon, and he contained the entire universe in himself, and he was this little singular point where all of the mass of the universe was all located together. But then an explosion happened, and Adam Kadmon and his fragments went shooting out all over the universe. And now there's little pieces of Adam Kadmon all over the divine spark, all over the universe and in all people. I read some things last night that there are some sects of the Kabbalah, those Jews who actually believe that the only place in the world where the real spark of the divine exists is in the 12 tribes. It does not and cannot exist anywhere else. And that elevates the Jews to them as a superior race. You think about it. Do I love the Jews? Absolutely. I love, and they are the enemies of the gospel, and I love my enemies because I know that God is going to save a remnant of them in the last days. But right now, their religion is anti-Christ at best. That's what their religion is, all right? Anyway, so that all spark, that comes from the spark of divinity that's mentioned in the Kabbalah. Now, I mentioned this, and I think it was last week's Watchman broadcast, that artificial intelligence is now moving into the mainstream. Somebody just sent me an email today. Didn't have a chance to work it up and get it in here. But it's about artificial intelligence systems. One person sent me the idea of an artificial intelligence system in cars. Cars being able to read you and be able to think about where you want to go and what you want to do and so on. That is being worked on and implemented even as we speak. But there's one story after another that's coming in about artificial intelligence. A lady just sent me an email about websites now that are intelligent that will design themselves based upon what you want. You see where it's going? And so now we have the world's first artificial intelligence home console. So here's this little device, and look at it. Why, it's a cube. It's called the Emo Spark. And the Emo Spark is, hi, I am Emo Spark. I am the first artificial intelligence console committed to your happiness. And look at this. They're trying to raise $100,000. This is one of those kickstart programs where everybody pulls their money in to help this business grow. Their goal was $100,000. They've got $178,000 as of whenever I took this screen capture. But look at it. It's a cube. It's the AllSpark from Transformers. And I want you to think of something now. The AllSpark of the Transformers has the ability to turn any electric device or electronically controlled device into a divine being, into a god, into a living creature. That's what it does. Artificial intelligence, the Emo Spark, Emo for emotions. This thing is going, right now it's a spark. Artificial intelligence is at its infancy or in its germ state. One of these days, it's going to take over the world. I think that when this false prophet causes fire to come down from heaven, I think that it has everything to do with what the Jews, the Kabbalists, the New Agers, and everybody else, it's even moved into the church now, the idea of the flame of divinity, I think, is the fire that the false prophet calls down from heaven. You think about that. What kind of fire would it be? Remember what Peter warned us about in 1 Peter chapter 4? He told us, beloved, verse 12, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happen unto you. But rejoice in as much as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. I think, you go back and watch The Power of the Flame, and I laid it out line upon line. I think this world is headed for a day of fire. I think it's when the false prophet calls fire down from heaven. I think it's the fiery trial mentioned here in 1 Peter chapter 4. And I think it's the day that man becomes his own God, or man becomes God, that spark of divinity erupting into a full flame of godhood. Now remember, the AllSpark, the cube, the Emo Spark, the Kabbalah little cube there, it has the divine spark in it. It has the ability to transform someone's life into a state of divinity. It has the AllSpark in the Transformers movies takes anything electric that runs on electricity and turns it into a god. I want you to think about something. Take a look at this graphic here. Your brain functions on electricity. Your heart beats by way of electricity. Nerve impulses are electric. Muscle movement. I know a lot about this. They're run on electricity. Your body is an electrical device. 2006, I was electrocuted by a faulty main electrical wire going into my house. I was literally on my hands and knees in a bed of electricity. Didn't know it until my right shoulder made contact with the metal beam of my house. I was underneath my house on all fours, down in the dirt and the mud. And I can tell you that after that electricity let me go, because God made it, because I said, God, I don't want to leave my... I was going to die. I was ready. I was waiting to die. And I said, I don't want to leave my wife and kids. And God let me go just like that. I can tell you that for about a week, I could barely move anything in my body. You know why? The doctor I went to see, it was a burn and electrocution specialist up at the hospital up in St. Louis. And he said, well, it's no wonder. He said, every muscle in your body was twitching and moving at the same rate the electricity was flowing through that line. He said, you're lucky. If somebody would have come in, turned the ice maker on or the air conditioner or something like that, you'd probably been killed. I'm not lucky. I'm blessed. Amen. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. I'll take it. But I know about electricity and muscles. So here's what I want you to think about. The Transformers. That's us. Humankind is the lifeless electrical device that when the all spark touches us, man would become a god. You think about that, all right? So here's what I want you to comprehend. And when you watch this movie, The Transformers, you see the toaster come to life, okay? You're the toaster. Humans are the ones that are going to be transformed in this world. The all spark of divinity, flaming up into full flame of divinity, the false prophet calling down fire from heaven and so on. I think humanity is what's going to be transformed by the all spark. Now, we know that at some point humans are going to be directly interfaced with these electronic devices here, okay? But right now, I don't know how that works. Okay? No matter what I do with this, I still cannot get into its operating system. How will it be that humans are going to be interfaced with computers? How's that going to happen? Our software writer, the lady who writes the Pure Bible Search software, she sent me a website and a link, and she said, Pastor, you got to read this. Okay? An article written March 1960 by J.C.R. Licklider, I don't know who that is, so don't ask, who wrote a paper, a dissertation, called Man-Computer Symbiosis. You know what that is. You know what a symbiotic relationship is. He's going to explain it in a little bit. It's two groups that feed off of each other that cannot live apart from one another. Computers want to become God. They need humans to program them that way. Humans want to become God. The computer, who is now God, is going to have to aid them in doing that. You see how they need each other. He wrote this in 1960. He wrote this at a time, and I got a picture of it, I'm going to show you in a minute, when computers were not handheld devices. Computers were warehouse-held devices. They were huge, and they had very limited ability. How we sent a rocket up to the moon and landed men on the moon and came back, and they used very primitive computers back then, that just boggles my mind. But they did. I watched a documentary on it. They hardwired all of the programming for those computers. They hired women to work in factories to do nothing but connect copper wires from one point to another. Okay? That's how every bit of the programming for these computers was done by hardwire. It's amazing. Anyway, man-computer symbiosis. Here's his summary. I want you to look at this. I think it's significant. Man-computer symbiosis is an expected development in cooperative interaction between men and electronic computers. It will involve very close coupling between the human and the electronic members of the partnership. The main aims are, number one, to let computers facilitate formulative thinking as they now facilitate the solution of formulative problems, and number two, to enable men and computers to cooperate in making decisions and controlling complex situations without inflexible dependence on predetermined programs. In the anticipated symbiotic partnership, men will set the goals, formulate the hypothesis, determine the criteria, and perform the evaluations. Computing machines will do the routine work that must be done to prepare the way for insights and decisions in technical and scientific thinking. That's what he was writing about in 1960, that man and the computer was going to join together and learn to get along with one another and sing Kumbaya and say, let there be peace in the world. The answer is, my friend, is blowing in the wind. That's what he was talking about. Now, He's going to describe, 1960, he's going to describe what symbiosis is. When I saw this, jaw dropped. Wrote our software lady, Donna, an email, and I said, did you see this part? She said, yeah, that's the part I thought would get your attention. He's now going to describe a symbiotic relationship that is the model for the age at when the computers mingle with the humans. Watch it. 1960. The fig tree is pollinated only by the insect Blastophaga grosserum. The larva of the insect lives in the ovary of the fig tree, and there it gets its food. The tree and the insect are thus heavily interdependent. The tree cannot reproduce without the insect. The insect cannot eat without the tree. Together, they constitute not only a viable, but a productive, thriving partnership. This is cooperative, or this cooperative living together in intimate association or even close union of two dissimilar organisms is called symbiosis. Two dissimilar organisms. How can I get my iPad stuck and hooked up to my brain? If they just run wires into my skull, that's gonna hurt. And it probably won't work right. How are they going to do that? But to me, using the narrative and the symbolism of the fig tree, do you know? Yeah, the fig tree represents Israel. Hang on one second. Let's look at other verses in the Bible that give you an idea of what figs and fig trees represent. Hang on. Remember, the false prophet can cause fire to fall down from heaven. Angels are flaming fire ministers. Let's look at the scripture. Isaiah 34:4. And all the host of heavens are angels, shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their host shall, look at it, shall fall down as the leaf falleth off from the vine and as a falling fig from the fig tree. Revelation 6:12. And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. Are you catching this? Fires falling down from heaven, stars, angels, the fall of the angels from heaven, just like a fig when she's shaken of a wind, of a mighty wind. That's what they heard on the day of Pentecost, wasn't it? And the figs falling off the tree is a picture of these angels of fire falling down to the earth. And when does it happen? It happens when Jesus has the DNA book all rolled up, and he begins to open that book. Then the fire fig angels fall down from the heavens. The fire comes down. That got me. So from 1960 forward, maybe even before that, mankind is developing this idea of what it would be like for humans to be connected to computers or robotics. And so I was fascinated with the concept of the $6 million man, Lee Majors, Steve Austin, astronaut, a man barely alive, part man, part machine. I was fascinated by that. And I'm going, you mean it costs $6 million to make this guy? Now, in like the 21st century, we were going, you mean it only costs $6 million to do that? By the way, I heard that there's going to be a remake and they're going to call it the $6 billion man. The number six, I think it's important there. Go read Genesis 6 and I think you'll find out why. So here, watch this now. Jesus is unrolling the DNA book. He's broken the seals, the sixth seal. And now the stars are falling down from heaven, the host of heaven, fourth kingdom. They shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. How is it that we can connect computer electronics with human beings? Here's an article. They're showing you how right now. Haved cracks DNA storage, crams 700 terabytes of data into a single gram. 700 terabytes. This iPad has 64 gigabytes in it. Okay, that's the most that I could get. That's how much data, information, whether it's books or movies or music or whatever it is, PDFs or whatever, 64 gigabytes, 64,000 megabytes is what it is, all right? A 700 terabyte, it takes 1,000 gigabytes to make 1 terabyte. You're talking about 700 terabytes of information. Some of the hard drives that are coming out now are 1 and 2 terabytes. Think of 700 hard drives all plugged into one computer. It would take a lot of room and a lot of space to plug in 700 hard drives. A lot of corporations do things like this. We know the government is. 700 terabytes of information held in a single gram of DNA. Now they're figuring out how to use DNA not only as a computer storage device, but as a mini computer. Here's a way that it works. I don't know if you can make sense out of all this, but it basically uses the 4 base pairs of DNA. Remember we were talking about the bits of a computer, the switches on and off and so on, zeros and ones. They're able to use the companionship of adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine to use them as binary switches. Let's say adenine and thymine here would mean the zero, guanine and cytosine here would mean one, and that's how they're going to follow the trail. That's how they use it for storage. Then the computer, the main computer, reads the bits that are encoded into the DNA, which is basically a book. Okay, that's basically what DNA is. So they're taking DNA, they're stripping it down so that it doesn't say anything, and they're loading it back up with zeros and ones. That's what they're doing. My mind is just doing this research into the singularity. My mind literally has become overwhelmed with the amount of information that is just being flooded in right now with the breakthroughs that they're making. And I'm telling you, we are headed for a straight course for man and machine symbiosis. It's been talked about for years. That's where everybody is headed, except those who put their trust in God. Get ready for that fiery trial, because I think it's going to happen. Here's another one. Artificial intelligence breakthrough. Microsoft's Project Adam. Stop right here. Project who? Adam. Why did they call it Adam? We're going to find out. Probably won't get there today. We are going to find out why they call it Project Adam. You think about who he was, all right? Microsoft's Project Adam identifies dog breeds, points to future of machine learning. Microsoft Research has developed a new system for machine learning and artificial intelligence called Project Adam that advances the speed and efficiency of computers and their ability to learn. Project Adam takes its cues from the human brain to absorb new data and teach itself new skills such as distinguishing among different breeds of dogs. That was the demonstration at the company's faculty summit in Redmond this morning as Microsoft brought out several different breeds of dogs on stage and showed how the technology could automatically distinguish among them in real time using computer vision and insights from large sets of data. Microsoft says Project Adam has achieved breakthroughs in machine learning by using distributed networks and an asynchronous technique that improves the overall efficiency and accuracy of the system over time. This is a critical area of technology as Microsoft and tech giants race to build intelligent, predictive systems that leverage mobile technologies and the cloud. Get ready. We're going to talk about the cloud. You've heard of it, haven't you? You know what it is? I'm going to explain it to you what it is here in a little bit. But here's Microsoft now. There's some companies that are just at the top of everything. Microsoft, Apple, let's see here. Who else could be up there? Google. They're right up there at the top. Those are the companies right now that are working and thrusting forward this artificial intelligence design and at the same time figuring out how, once we get these computers smart, how to mingle them with our own seed into our own DNA so that man and his offspring is a fusion of the two. Have you ever taken a look at Microsoft's logo? You see it every time the Windows thing comes on your computer. You've seen it. You ever paid attention to it? It's a very simple thing. It's an X chromosome. Look at it. It's what it is. And I want you to notice the four colors. Okay? Red, green, blue, and yellow. You know what those represent? Look down there at the right corner there. They represent earth. See the little tree in the green. Wind, see the cloud, yellow, water, blue, and fire, orange or red. Look at the Microsoft logo. Look at the Elemental Witchcraft logo. It's the same thing. The elements, earth, wind, fire, and water. We dealt with that in the Power of Witchcraft, where we talk about witchcraft and what they base their witchcraft on. It's based upon the four elements, which I think are part of the fourth kingdom in the book of Daniel, and they also relate to four other things that we're going to look at, maybe today, maybe a little bit later on, adenine, guanine, cytosine, thiamine. That's what they represent, and it makes sense. When you look at the Microsoft logo, you see the cross there, you see the X chromosome, and you see the four parts to it, the four elementals, witches use the forces that they believe are in the elements to do their magic. But here's the thing. Elemental witchcraft says that these four elements, when combined together, give rise to the fifth element. You know who that is? It's the symbol of the pentagram. It's the Antichrist. Okay? That's that divine spark. Oh, looky here. Ambitious Google drive to put human genome online gathers steam. Look at Google's four colors. Blue, water, green, earth, yellow air, red fire. Google has four, you know, one, two, three, four, five, six letters in their name, but they use four colors. The colors of earth, wind, fire, and water. They are the elements that the Apostle Paul talked about in the book of Galatians and the rudiments of this world that are related to witchcraft and the principalities, powers, rulers of darkness, and spiritual wickedness in high places. You're looking at, when you look at the Microsoft logo, the elemental symbols, and the logo of Google, you're looking at the rise of the fourth kingdom, because that's where they're headed. Go back to this article. Ambitious Google Drive to put human genome online gathers steam. Do you know what Google Drive is? If you have a Gmail account or a YouTube account, you have a Google Drive account. You may not know it, but you do. Google likes to, when you sign up for one thing, Google puts you in everything. Their Google Plus, which is like their rival to Facebook, which hardly nobody goes to, you're automatically in. Okay? Now I'm going to explain some of these terminologies here in a little bit. But here's their effort. They're going to put everybody's DNA code into the cloud. What did I just say? Let's read the article. Google's plan to store entire copies of the human genome online is edging closer to reality, with 3,500 genomes already stored on its servers. The more medical institutes jumping on board, the blueprint, look at it, the blueprint of every person on earth could soon be in the cloud. The potentially game-changing project called Google Genomics has now been quietly moving forward for a year and a half. I want you to think about it. Think about what they said. The genome. Everybody's DNA, every human's DNA, is a little bit different. My DNA has differences between my wife's DNA. Our children have combinations of both of us. So if they were DNA tested, they could say, yep, Lisa's the mother, Michael's the father. That's just how it works. Even the good people that I ministered to in Africa, I asked the interpreter. I was going to try to teach them about DNA. I didn't know what they knew. So I said to the interpreter, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, I'm not trying to be condescending, but do these people know about DNA? He said, oh, yeah, DNA. Yeah, he said, they use it all the time. They find out whose kid belongs to who. I went, well, it's the same thing they do in America. I was able to teach those people DNA right out of the Bible. They were just absolutely amazed. They glorified and praised God. Watch this. When you start talking about everybody's genome, the word genome applies to my specific genetic structure, which is slightly different than my wife's, which is slightly different than my third cousin twice removed, or the interpreter that I talked to in Kenya. There's little subtle differences, and everybody on the planet has a different genome. But I want you to think about something. If we were to take all of these different genomes and squeeze them together into one place, you know who we would have? Adam. That's where we came from. Adam contained in his bowels everybody, every genetic marker, every genetic makeup, every genetic structure, every genome was in Adam, because everybody on the planet came from Adam. These genomes are now scattered all over the earth, aren't they? Google wants to take everybody's genome and bring them all back together in one place. Where are they going to bring it together? In what's called the cloud. You may have heard that. You don't know what it is. I'm going to explain it to you. But let's go back to our roots here. This is supposed to be our teaching on the secrets of the $1 bill. I've been hiding it in here. That way nobody would find it. If you look closely, let me put it up on the screen here. You see that picture of the eagle? See those stars above its head that make a hexagram? There's 13 stars there, and they make a six-pointed figure, a hexagram, a triangle up and a triangle down. And I want you to notice that what surrounds those 13 stars are the clouds. I think it was done by design. I think the spirit of this world, the spirit that worketh in the children of disobedience, I think that that spirit was responsible for putting this symbol, the hexagram. Well, you know, and you know what it means. You know what it represents, don't you? It's like the square and compass of masonry, the double-headed eagle, sons of God, daughters of men, fused together, zero and one, switch on, switch off. Now in the quantum computers, they're both together. That's what the hexagram means, a triangle pointing up and a triangle pointing down. So it means this kingdom mingled together with this kingdom in the cloud. You say, well, that's kind of a stretch. You hang on a second. Let me show you some more. Remember this picture? This is called the apotheosis of George Washington. Apotheosis simply means we turned him into a god. This is in the Capitol building. If you've seen the dome shape of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., you've only seen part of it. If you go into the Capitol building itself, it was done this way by design. It was designed, and it was supposed to be, that George Washington was supposed to be buried in a chamber under the ground, directly underneath the Capitol Rotunda. So you have a level underground where George Washington's body was supposed to be. then you have a level that is at ground level, and every president that dies, their coffin gets to go in that circle for a while. It's always in the Capitol Rotunda. Remember when Ronald Reagan died. Remember when JFK died. When these presidents die, they take their body and they put it in the ground floor there of the rotunda. The concept, and overhead, the inside of the Capitol Dome, is this picture right here of the first president who became a god, ascended to godhood. So the idea is, he was in the lower part, he came to the level with humans, and he ascended up into the clouds. Because look at it, there's a close-up here. Here's Washington, and all of those 13 goddesses that surround him. And the rainbow, you see the rainbow? Stop right here. Revelation 10, are you ready? Because whatever we see God, we see the opposite in Lucifer and the Antichrist. Revelation 10, I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven clothed with a cloud, George Washington, and a rainbow was upon his head. This one's at his feet, George Washington. It's a mockery of the coming of the mighty angel, Revelation 10. I think that's Jesus. You can disagree if you want, but that is a mockery of that. Okay? So here we have George Washington, the man who became God. He's in the clouds. He's got the 13 mystery Babylons surrounding him, supposed to be representative of the 13 states. The 13 stars. See, these goddesses here have stars over their heads. They represent the heavenly luminaries, the host of heaven, the angels that are up in the sky, that one of these days are going to fall when the fire comes down, when the figs drop. Okay? Here's what Manly Hall said about the symbolism of the clouds and the deity. Artists attempting to portray divinity often show only a hand emerging from an impenetrable cloud. The cloud signifies the unknowable divinity concealed from man by human limitation. The hand signifies the divine activity, the only part of God which is cognizable to the lower senses, or really the only part of God that we can understand. Now I'm going to go back to this picture of George Washington and all these women surrounding him. Here we have the god, and he's surrounded by these female consorts. Remember in the Kabbalah. In the Kabbalah, with the divine spark, you have the two pillars on the outside and you have the third one in the middle. We talked about it last week and what it represented. This pillar represents Yahweh. This pillar supposedly represents Shekinah, male and female, sons of God, daughters of men. In case you say, well, yeah, Shekinah, that's the glory of God. And, you know, that's the glory of God in the tabernacle. Where's say that? That's in the Bible. Really? Show it to me. Show me the word Shekinah in a King James Bible, in the New Living Testament, in the book, the NIV, the RSV, the Message, New King James. Show it to me. It's not there. Well, you know, the Hebrew. It's not in the Hebrew either. It's not in the Bible. The masculine form is Shekan, means presence, but not Shekinah. That's female. You know where it came from? It came from the Zohar. Came from the writings of the mystic rabbis who got their doctrine from Baal and Ashtaroth and instead called it Yahweh and Shekinah. But really what it is Baal and Ashtaroth. And they're in the Washington and his Shekinahs. They're in the clouds. Here's another picture of a god and his Shekinah, his consort, in the clouds. Remember this picture? Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican. This is supposedly God giving life to Adam. Read your Bible, people. It didn't happen that way. God didn't go, Adam, touch me. Touch me. Okay? Listen, it's already wintertime around here. This is November, and we've had one of the coldest spells in the month of November for the state of Missouri since the 70s. And already people are walking around, and every time you touch something, pssst, I don't like that. Okay. I walk around, no kidding. I walk around on these carpeted floors every chance I get. I don't know if you know this. And the, on the outside corners of anything in your house, if you have drywall or whatever, you have a metal corner bead there that makes a perfect corner. I used to be in drywall. Okay. I know about these things. I walk around from corner to corner whenever I walk around on carpeted floor, touching corner beads with the back of my hand, because there it won't hurt. Because I hate touching anything else and bolts of electricity shooting up my body.
I don't like that.
I don't want no divine spark, okay? None for me. That's not how God gave Adam the breath of life. He breathed into his nostrils his breath and gave him life. Man became a living soul. Here Michelangelo is saying, no, he's got a divine spark on his. He's been rubbing a balloon on his head, and he took his sweater off real fast, and now he's got the divine spark in his finger. Or, if you take a really good look at that picture, you see God's right hand fixing to touch Adam. Look where God's left hand is. It's around his naked, red-headed consort. Her name is Shekinah. Yahweh and Shekinah, or Baal and Ashtaroth, are in the clouds, and they're giving Adam the divine spark so he can become divine. He can become a god. Are you seeing anything here? There was a movie that came out. In fact, the guy who wrote and directed the movie, The Fifth Element, with Bruce Willis. The Fifth Element is about the four base pairs coming together, the four elements, and the fifth element coming out. It's in the form of this half-naked woman going around, and she has the power to save the earth. Get it? Okay? And there's something special about her DNA. She has more than two strands of DNA. Think about it. Okay? The same guy that wrote and directed The Fifth Element, wrote and directed this movie, Luc Besson, called Lucy. Now, there's two things that it's named after. Number one, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? Because he says at the end, I will be like the Most High. Lucy is about a woman who turns into God, literally. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, and they show this in the movie, once Lucy, and what it is, these drug lords planted this bag of drugs in her body, and it leaked, and it's making her more aware. She's using more of her brain now. She gets to a certain point to where she's like 90% of her brain capacity. And see, here's what they're teaching you. They're teaching you that we have everything we need right here to become a god. We just have all these closed doors that we can't get through. Revelation 9, think about that. These portals that we can't open because we're too fixated on mating and having money and things like that. Anyway, she surpasses all this. She's using 90% of her brain now, and she can travel back and forth in time. She goes all the way back because Time Magazine came out with, several years ago, the front page, they said they had found what they were calling the first woman. It was a skeleton of a monkey, and they're saying that it's a prototype human being, and that this individual skeleton represented really the first type of human that we now evolved into. And they said it was a female, and they called her Lucy. Probably based upon the Beatles song, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which a lot of people say was a reference to LSD. I think it was. But I want you to think of Lucifer in the sky. And you know what Lucifer was decorated with? Diamonds, precious stones, 10 different ones, in fact. So this Lucy in this movie goes back in time, and she finds the other Lucy from 14 million years ago. You know what the future Lucy does to the old Lucy? Take a look. Yep, giving her the finger, giving her the divine spark that turns into humanity. See, it's all about evolution. This whole movie was about evolution. Because what happens? See here, the old Lucy goes from it's a monkey, by the way. Goes from monkey stage to human stage, and now Lucy, because she takes this drug, she now becomes a god. And one of the policemen that she befriended during this time is asking, by the way, you know what she turns into at the very last? A computer. She turns into a supercomputer, and then she collects the entire knowledge of everything in the universe with her enhanced mind and puts it on a USB chip, gives it to Morgan Freeman. Good luck figuring out how to plug the USB thing in right, eh, Morgan? Okay? But that's what she becomes, and then she becomes a god, and the guy says, well, where is she? And all of a sudden he gets a thing on his phone, dink, and looks at it, and it says, I am everywhere. That's a god. The whole thing's right there. Okay, I'm not saying you got to go watch these movies. I'm just telling you that the spirit of this world, the spirit that works in the children of disobedience, Ephesians chapter 2, the god of this world, is starting to illuminate the minds of people with these concepts so that when it comes time, they're going to accept it. Now, let's get back to this cloud thing. I want to explain cloud computing, all right? Here's a picture of it. I got this off the internet. I got this from the cloud, okay? Here's a picture of it. Cloud computing infrastructure as a service, and I won't go into the nature of all of these things, okay? But let me go back into computer history just a little bit, okay? There isn't a device that comes out now, whether it's a iPad, iPhone, an iPod, or some sort of Android tablet, or a PC, that doesn't have some way to connect to the internet. They all come equipped. They all come with an Ethernet device. Ethernet. Ether means like that's the fifth element, by the way, spirit. An Ethernet port, I just figured that out. An Ethernet port on there which hardwires you to the internet, or some of them come automatically with built-in Wi-Fi, laptops do, and things like that. Let me explain where I'm going. Back in the 90s. Back in the 80s and the 90s, when we had our Commodore computers and our Apple computers and our Atari computers and whatever else you had. Even back in the 90s when we had Windows 3.1 computers. All of the data and stuff that we had on those computers, we were using Quicken for our personal accounting and to keep our checkbook going. We were using all of these programs on these computers. All of that information was private, and we kept it. All because all the computers back then were unconnected. They were just single computers. I had a PC in my house, played Castle Wolfenstein. I was very productive back then. And wrote things, did little Bible searches, all right? And that was all my stuff, and it was my information. And it was all private. It was mine. I had control over my information. But then all of a sudden, Windows 95 came equipped with a way that you could use a telephone modem to connect to the internet. That was like phase one. And then by the time Windows 98 comes around, now they're anticipating that you might get an Ethernet card on your computer and plug in a Category 5 networking cable and get into some sort of high-speed internet like DSL. Now we have cable and we have fiber optic and everything like that. But back then, all the information on computers was private. Nobody could get into it. Nobody could hack into it. It wasn't connected to anything. Now everything is connected. Every computer, every tablet, every device, everything. Everything is connected, okay? And when they start talking about cloud computing, the Google Drive is one. We use a service called Dropbox. We also, Microsoft has one. We use that service as well. I put all my sermons that I work on at home or on my tablet or on my phone. I'm sitting in my deer stand and I am working on sermons, believe it or not, in my deer stand. Well, I'm using my tablet. My tablet is hooked in with a wireless carrier. And when I get ready to save my document, it saves it not just on here, but it automatically transmits the data, and that document is in a server that Microsoft owns, and it's their OneDrive, Singularity. Get it? Okay. Or Dropbox. When we record our church services, they are recorded into a Dropbox folder that goes to a server, a computer, somewhere. I don't know where it goes, but then all of the other computers we have in this office that are synchronized with that automatically get that same file. In other words, when I'm sitting at one computer and I put a file in a Dropbox folder, it automatically goes to the other computers that are set up with that. But the main one is saved in the cloud. The main server somewhere. It's a cluster of hard drives sitting in Pomona Beach, California, or wherever. I just made that up. Okay? But anyway, here it is. Here's the idea that we're moving and migrating into what's called cloud computing. In other words, instead of everything being done on our local computers, the ones that are right in front of us, now not just the information and documents that you have or videos or photos, my phone, my iPad automatically, if I take a picture, automatically sends that to my cloud account, whichever one I set it up to. And there they are right there. If my computer crashes, I have all my stuff, all my PowerPoints, all my notes, everything. I already have it saved and backed up in the cloud. It's a convenience that we're learning how to use. But it's going beyond that, because Google says, why don't we just have our programs on our computer? And instead of you installing all of these programs on your computer, why don't you just use a web browser and tap into our software programs on our computers? Google Documents. You can do word processing. You can do spreadsheets. You can do presentation things on Google Documents, and they don't download anything onto your computer. Everything is done in the cloud. So I want you to get this concept. It's the principle that all information, all knowledge of everything is going to be stored in the clouds. And when you want, let me go back to this picture here, cloud computing. When you want a piece of that information, the cloud will then send you down little drops of information to your computer. Instead of you getting the whole thing, you only need one document. So it'll send you down one document. Just like little raindrops. CERN. CERN, the Large Hadron Collider, they smash particles together, billions of them, and there is, I don't know how many terabytes of data that has to be sifted through from this one CERN thing there in Europe. Guess how they do it? All the data gets transmitted to a cloud, and researchers all over the planet are looking and sifting through and analyzing that data. Instead of all of these researchers being in Europe, now they can be anywhere. Cloud computing is literally transforming the way that you and I do our work, get our information, or even think. It's all in the cloud. If you remember, a couple Watchmen broadcasts ago, I was talking about how the computers were being seen as a god. There was a TED Talk by Kevin Kelly, who publishes Wired Magazine. Okay, he called it The Next 5,000 Days. You go watch this video. You can Google this and you watch this thing, because you know what he's telling you? He said 5,000 days ago, the internet started. No one comprehended where it was going to be. No one comprehended 5,000 days ago that the internet would be what it is now. But he said, I think that at some point, everything belongs in the cloud. And really, Google and Microsoft and Dropbox and Apple has a cloud. Ubuntu, which is a Linux distro, tried it for a while and didn't work out very good. But you have all these cloud services. At some point, they're really the ones that are going to be in charge, like gods. They'll be in charge of the information that you get, because it's not local to your computer any longer. See where it's going here? Actually, I think on our purebiblesearch.com website, if you don't or can't download the software for King James Pure Bible Search,
you can use it in the cloud. Okay? You see where it's going. But this guy, Kevin Kelly, was talking about the future of the web, and he said it's all going to be cloud-based. And he said, here's the talking points that he had. There's only one machine. It's the cloud. The web, the World Wide Web, is its operating system, the cloud. All screens look into the one, the cloud. Microsoft calls it the OneDrive. No bits will live outside the web or the cloud. To share is to gain. Let the one read it. The one is us. We are in the one. The cloud is the collective of everybody on the planet all in one place. You see now the concept of Google taking everybody's DNA sample and bringing it all together in the cloud. Just like what that hexagram in the clouds represent. Get ready for this. The most obvious things, we're going to look at clouds. The most obvious thing in the world about clouds is in Job 35:5. Okay? Look under the heavens and see, behold the clouds, which are higher than thou. So, number one, and I think this means something. Clouds are higher than humans. Think about it. Think about the apotheosis of Washington. It's over everybody's head. Think about Michelangelo and God and Adam and the clouds that are up there. Clouds are higher than us. Okay? And I want you to get that concept, because now, instead of us working on our locally based computer and us being the master of everything that happens in the computer world and our interaction with it, we are slowly but surely learning how to migrate everything to a higher source. That's the first thing the Bible's telling you. Job 36:27. Now watch this. For he maketh small the drops of water. They pour down rain according to the vapor thereof, which the clouds do drop and distill upon man abundantly. So number one, the clouds are higher than us. Number two, the purpose of the clouds is to drop and distill dew or rain upon man abundantly. Why do you think it was called the cloud? There is a spirit that works in the children of disobedience. Because the cloud holds everything, and then it sends it down little packets at a time. Just exactly what you need. Not too much, not too little. But it's all done at the top. We are setting up our rulers to be over us. Now, think about that. Think about that doctrine, that idea, that the cloud is going to send down bits of information like rain. Deuteronomy 32:2. Get ready. My doctrine shall drop as the rain. My speech shall distill as the dew, as the small rain upon the tender herb, and as the showers upon the grass. Isn't that cool? By the way, this Bible, this is the cloud. Okay? We're going to talk about Jesus and how we can recognize him. Remember? Cometh in the clouds. And he said, my doctrine comes down just like the gentle rain. You see, when we read our Bible, God doesn't flood us all at once with all everything that he is. It would kill us. We wouldn't be able to handle it. So he just gives us little bits and pieces at a time so that we can grow thereby. Boy, that's good, isn't it? But see right here, Deuteronomy 32:2, the doctrine shall drop as the rain. It's going to come out of the clouds. It's precisely the concept that cloud computing is. They're going to hold all the data, all the information, all the software. You're just going to use it. Google even has, if you use Chrome browser, you can get apps, tiny little applications like you can on your iPad or your iPhone or your Android tablet. The only thing is they never install the applications on your local computer. It's all in the web. It's all in the cloud. Every bit of it. Get ready. Here's some more. What's in the cloud? You remember what's in the cloud? There's a cloud. And we go, okay, what's in the cloud here? Well, here it's a hexagram. Let's just read it. Genesis chapter 9. God said, I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. Verse 16, and the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. God said, look at the cloud. Guess what's in the cloud? The bow. You know who that rainbow is? In Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 28, Ezekiel's getting to see the glory of God, the glory of the Lord, and the throne of God, and the four living creatures. You remember that? And he said, as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard a voice of one that spake. Go back to that picture of the apotheosis of George Washington. Okay? There he is in the clouds, and there's a bow there. He is a symbol of a different covenant. A covenant, Isaiah 28 says, a covenant with hell and with death. But the real covenant, the one we find in Genesis chapter 9, God puts his bow, which is the glory of the Lord. And go back to Revelation 10, we have the mighty angel clothed with a cloud with a rainbow over his head. That's the glory of the Lord. You know who I think that is? You know who I think that bow in the cloud is? I think it's Jesus, who is the token of the covenant that God makes between him and between all mankind. So now here's what I want you to do. I want you to take that concept now, and I want you to reverse it. Think about this. Think about who this represents. Think about what's in the cloud in the $1 bill, the hexagram, the fusion of the opposites. Are you getting that? Okay. Here we have Jesus in the cloud. We have some other entity in a different kind of cloud. By the way, I love this. This is one of my favorite ones. Turn to the 66th chapter of the Bible. Okay. Isaiah, you know, it has 66 chapters. It's like a little mini Bible. Your Bible has 66 books in it. So if you turn to the 66th chapter, you're going to see something. Genesis has 50 chapters. So 50 plus 10 would be Exodus 10, plus 6 would be Exodus 16. Guess what you're going to see? Exodus 16:10. It came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. What did they see? Ezekiel said it was a rainbow. The glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. That is so sweet. I love this. And by the way, you know what God gave them in the 66th chapter of the Bible? You know what he gave Israel for the first time ever? Manna, bread from heaven. Jesus said, I am the bread. This is the man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word. Oh, I love this. It's so in order. It's so right, people. This book is so right. It's got the answers to everything. I was asked about cloud computing 2 years ago, and I just starting to know what it was then. I'm starting to use Dropbox. And I'm going, boy, I don't know. When I started looking at it, started looking at the Bible and got the concept, you just hang on a second. Remember, they want to put everybody's genome where? In the cloud. They shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. Where? Matthew 24:29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven. Stop right here. When the stars fall from heaven, that's the sixth seal opening up. And the stars are falling from heaven like a fig tree casting her untimely figs when she's shaken of a mighty wind. Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Remember, the glory of the Lord was seen in the cloud in the 66th chapter of the Bible, and it was Jesus Christ. He's in the clouds. I love this. By the way, I didn't have this in my notes, and I got to, if you have not seen this, I got to show you this. Do you remember, and what we're talking about is the sign of Christ coming is that he's coming in the clouds. He's coming in the clouds. He's in the clouds. Revelation 10, he's clothed with a cloud. I want you to think about that. So the clouds are the picture of Christ at his coming. He's going to appear in the clouds. When Jesus came the first time, do you remember what Mary did with him? Okay? Was there any clouds on that day? Was there? No. But what did Mary do with Jesus? She brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger. You know, there's only one other place in the whole Bible. Actually, there's two, but there's most significant one here is in the book of Job. And I think it's in Job, 38. Here it is, right here. It actually tells you that the swaddling clothes that Mary put on Jesus were clouds. Chapter 38 of Job, verse 9, when I made the cloud the garment thereof, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it. Jesus, when he came the first time, was clothed with the clouds. When he comes the second time, he's going to be clothed with the clouds. Acts chapter 1, verse 9. And when they had spoken these things, while they beheld, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel, which also said, Ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus, which is taken up from you into heaven, shall so come in like manner as ye have seen him go into heaven. He's coming in the clouds, people. Revelation 1:7, Behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him. And all kindreds of the earth shall wail because of him, even so. Amen. 1 Thessalonians 4:16, For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. So shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. I love it. Where are we going to meet Jesus? In the desert? No. At the Catholic Church? No. In Independence, Missouri, Joseph Smith? No. Where are we going to meet Jesus? In the clouds. Where are they gathering all the seed of men right now? They're gathering it together in the clouds. Cloud computing. Now watch this. Isaiah 14. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. I want you to notice two things. He said he would be like the Most High. That's God, Jesus Christ. He's going to do in a mimicking form what our Lord does. Remember, our Lord is the Lion of the tribe of Judah. Thus, Satan is a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Remember, Paul warned us about another Jesus. Paul warned us about another gospel, an antichrist, John referred to him as. Instead of him being the son of God, he's the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he is God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now I'm going to show you some scriptures. Now that's Jesus in the clouds, us meeting him in the clouds. Here is the Antichrist. Watch what the Bible says about him. Jeremiah 4:6, set up the standard toward Zion. Retire, stay not, for I will bring evil from the north. Think about it. Where is, let's stop right here. Where Santa Claus live? The north. Okay. Jeremiah said they were coming from the north. The northern army Joel talked about. What was it? The Borealis, this Hyperborea, that mythical land that sunk down under the ocean that was up north. Thule, the Germans called it. There's always this mystical land up in the north where this advanced race lives or used to live. And they're trapped right now under stone, ice. They need to come out one of these days. I will bring evil from the north, a great destruction. Look at verse 7. The lion has come up from his thicket, and the destroyer of the Gentiles is on his way. He has gone forth from his place to make thy land desolate, and thy city shall be laid waste without an inhabitant. Now look at what happens in verse 13. Behold, he shall come up as clouds, and his chariots shall be as a whirlwind. His horses are swifter than eagles. Woe unto us, for we are spoiled. So it says in the Bible that the destroyer of the Gentiles, let's go back here. Yeah, the destroyer of the Gentiles is on his way. He's coming from the north, and he's going to come up as clouds like a whirlwind. You've seen a whirlwind. Tornadoes, right? Or hurricanes? They're nothing but centrifugal force clouds. That's what they are. High winds, lots of dirt and debris, lots of moisture there. They're whirlwind clouds is what they are. And they're said the Antichrist is coming in the whirlwind clouds. Just wait till you find out what I know. Remember, I keep talking about the 50s. And they didn't have the little computers that we have now. They had warehouses full of them, full of one big, gigantic beast computer. All right? And they, you know, lab coats with, you know, guys in lab coats, you know, flipping switches and changing the vacuum tubes because that's what they ran on. One of the very first digital computers, a real computer that operated on electric switches of on and off. It was built by MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. It was used by the Air Force. This is going all the way back to the 50s. A man by the name of Jay Forrester built this thing, designed it, developed it. And immediately it went to work for the Air Force. To be used in warfare, to be used. I don't remember how exactly they were using it. Here's a picture of it right here. See, that thing is massive, right? You know what it was called? The Whirlwind. Very first digital computer to ever be used by professionals for Air Force. So you have to assume it had something to do with warfare and defense. It was called the Whirlwind. They had a sequel to it called the Whirlwind 2, and it had vacuum tubes in it and had everything, but it was doing things that nobody had ever seen before. Nobody could ever, we couldn't do it. So we built a machine that could and called it by a name that the Bible says is where the beast is coming from, the whirlwind, the clouds. Ezekiel 38:9. Thou shalt ascend and come like a storm. Thou shalt be like a cloud to cover the land, thou and all thy bands and many people with thee. You know who this is? Gog, the chief prince of Magog. When I see chief prince, you know what I see? Number one, an earthly ruler, but number two, a spiritual one. Principalities, powers. Gog, the chief prince. I think Gog is a spirit. And he's going to cover the land like a what? A cloud. Psalm or Ezekiel 38:16, and thou shalt come up against my people of Israel as a cloud to cover the land. It shall be in the latter days, and I will bring thee against my land, that the heathen may know me, when I shall be sanctified in thee, O Gog, before their eyes. Proverbs 25:14. Look at this. Whoso boasteth himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. Stop right here. Boasting of a false gift. Number one, salvation is a gift. The false prophet, I believe, is promising everyone immortality just like the dragon did or the serpent in Genesis chapter 3. I think the false prophet is going to offer everybody a false gift of immortality. It's not going to work. Oh, it will for a little while, say 5 months, but it won't last. I'll show you where I get that in a little bit. Number one, boasting of a false gift. Number two, you have evangelists, TV preachers, local pastors. They're all bragging about how they have the gifts. Oh, we speak in tongues. Oh, we're prophesying things that God never said in the Bible. Oh, we're getting this, dreams and visions. Oh, I'm seeing, oh, God's showing me something going on in your life. They're boasting a false gift. You know why they're false? Because they didn't come from here. Come from some kind of nonsense over here. But they didn't come from here. You know what it says? Whoso boasteth himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. Peter and Jude both talk about the false prophets of the last days. You know what Peter said? These are wells without water, clouds that are carried with a tempest, to whom the mist of darkness is reserved forever. Jude also said they were clouds without water. There's nothing in them. Acts 13:11, and now behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thee. Let me stop right here. In Acts chapter 13, go read Deuteronomy 13, Acts 13, Revelation 13, Genesis 13. You're going to see a common band in there. In Deuteronomy 13, God warns them about a false prophet. In Acts chapter 13, we actually have a guy who is a false prophet. His name is Bar-Jesus, son of Jesus. Think about it. He's a false prophet. And Paul curses him. You know what he does? And now behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thee. Thou shalt be blind, not seeing the sun for a season. And immediately there fell on him a mist and a darkness. And he went about seeking some to lead him by the hand. You see, what Paul did to this false prophet is nothing more than what Peter said should happen, to whom the mist of darkness is reserved forever. And I want you to think of what mist is. It's a cloud, it's fog, okay? That's what the Bible's term for fog is, mist. And a fog, basically, is a cloud that's down low. That's what it is. Now, here we're gonna wind up with this, and I want you to ponder this for a minute, okay? Taking all of man's genomes and putting them in the cloud. They give you this altruistic purpose for it, this very pious, holy cause. Google wants to aid people so they can live longer, or maybe, who knows, live forever. In order to do that, what we need is we need a copy of everybody's DNA. Don't worry, we're going to put it in a safe place. We're going to put it in the cloud. One of these days, out of the cloud, is going to come some sort of healing for everybody in the world so that they can be cured of all their diseases. And that means everybody in the world. You know, here in America, we have internet in most places in the world, and we pay for it and so on, and they're working on just covering the entire nation with internet connectivity. I've been to Kenya. There's places you don't find internet hardly anywhere. Okay, maybe some phone service and that, but it's hard to get to in places. Facebook and probably some other organizations are working on, Google even had the idea of floating balloons over countries, giving them free Wi-Fi, free internet service. Literally going to connect everybody to the network, connect them to the one, the cloud. Because Google is saying that what we hope is that we come up with a cure for every disease in the world. And out of that cloud, where all that knowledge is, we'll be able to find a cure. There'll be a cure for mankind for all of his diseases, and he won't have to die anymore. Ray Kurzweil, here you go, buddy. Your singularity is coming. And I want you to think of, literally, everybody's genome, everybody's got a piece of Adam in them. And it all comes back together into the one cloud, the OneDrive. Revelation chapter 9, because in the symbolism that you find in the Bible, clouds, mist, and smoke, it's the same idea and same concept, because it blocks the light. Revelation 9, the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven under the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke, there it is, out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. So coming out of the cloud of smoke, and you can look this up, and you'll see the connection there in the Bible. I just don't have it in my notes today. But the smoke and the cloud, symbolism is identical. Revelation 9, chapter 5. What comes out of the cloud? The scorpions. What do they do? Revelation 9, 5, and to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. And in those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. It literally says here that out of the smoke, out of the cloud, comes a sting upon men. And for 5 months, nobody dies. You say, well, I've lived 5 months before. That's nothing. I didn't die. Just 5 months. I didn't die. There's people dying everywhere right now. Right now, as we speak, people dying everywhere. For 5 months on this earth, nobody is going to die. Think about it. Think about it. Are these, is it all this stuff, this cloud computing, everything like that? It's taking on the design that God said that it would. Next week, I'm going to talk about Adam, the new Adam, Adam 2.0. Okay? Get ready for that one. Okay, Microsoft, the Adam Project, artificial intelligence, there's a reason why. All right, we'll look at that next week. Hope you're enjoying this. Try not to make it too hard for you. God, I have a very simple brain. There's some things in physics I don't understand, but what I do, I try to just get it to you in layman's terms so we can all understand it. But the key is the Bible right here. All right, God bless you. Pastor Mike, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.